last year, the bishop had this great idea of summoning all the clergy of the diocese for a conference last September. And it's normally the kind of thing that makes my heart sink. And I have to say, it coincided with Daniel coming back from Germany and about to go back to uni. And it was about the 1 week of the year we could fit holiday in. So there was a little bit of me that was quite grateful that I had an excuse to duck out of half of the conference. But I was there for the first part of it, and I tried to be a dutiful kind of member of the diocese and do everything. And amidst the dross, of which there was some, there was a real highlight. And that highlight was having Rachel Jordan come and speak to us. Probably not a name many of you would know. She's spoken at New Wine. You might have come across her there if you've been. Rachel actually heads up evangelism for the Church of England, and she was utterly brilliant. And what she did with us was give us a bit of a sneak preview. Last year, a whole kind of chunk of research was done by the Church of England, by the Evangelical Alliance, by something like 40 different denominations and streams of church within this country. And it was done to try and make sense of what people in our nation thought about Jesus, thought about Christianity, and how in particular they responded to evangelism, kind of people sharing their faith with them. And at times I think we can kind of feel things are quite negative as Christians, that kind of often the media, the messages that come through are negative messages. And it can kind of feel like, well, actually, less and less people seem to believe. People seem to be more and more negative about church, about Christianity. And actually, the message she brought and the result of that research was just quite kind of... For a bunch of clergy sitting there, we actually woke up, which is... You know, I have to say, is quite a surprise. And we took note because the messages that came through weren't the messages that we expected. And as I found myself listening to it, it really hit me. This has huge relevance for both how we do church, but actually how we share our faith kind of in the generation in which we live at this time. So over the next couple of weeks, I want to reflect on just some of the things that come out of that research. If you don't do stats, you're probably not going to like the next couple of weeks. So I apologize now, but I'm going to try and keep it simple and bring out kind of some of the key messages, because I think they are kind of really, really exciting. The starting point really is the reading, though. It comes at a key moment in Jesus' ministry. The bulk of Jesus' ministry is spent around the area around Lake Galilee and the towns around it. Of a 3-year ministry, probably almost all of it was spent there. And this is kind of regarded as kind of the transitional moment in Jesus' ministry. It's when he leaves that time around Galilee where he has been teaching, praying for people, healing the sick. And he starts to make his way to Jerusalem. So from a ministry that's been focused on the people and on ministering to them, the focus of his ministry now shifts to Jerusalem. It's only a 5-day journey, but if you read the Gospels, you will find a lot happens on that journey, and I suspect he took longer than 5 days to make his way to Jerusalem, because there are a lot of conversations that happen on that journey, a lot of things that happen on that journey. But the culmination of that journey is his death. And he knows that's coming, and he's starting to warn his disciples that it's coming. And it begins with him taking them to one side, and he takes them away from Galilee, not towards Jerusalem, but away from Jerusalem to a place called Caesarea Philippi. And it's kind of like he's having a private retreat with his disciples. I have to say, it's a funny choice of a place. It's like going on a spiritual retreat to Las Vegas, because it was kind of one of the more pagan places. But it's probably one of the places where he's not going to be recognized, where he can have time with his disciples. And kind of a lot of that time around Galilee has been about him really revealing who he is to people by the things he said and the things he's done. And I guess there are two kind of critical questions we all face about Jesus, really. Kind of the first one is, who is he? And it'd be interesting, I think, to see what that kind of survey reveals about people's thoughts about that. But also, you know, why did Jesus come? And particularly, why did Jesus die? Kind of those are the two of the biggest questions we have to ask about Jesus. And at the end of this kind of 3-year ministry about Galilee, it's a bit like he kind of puts his disciples through an exam. Kind of, what have you learnt? You've been watching me. You've been travelling with me. Kind of, and he begins with, well, who do the people say that I am? They get various answers. Well, you know, John the Baptist had been the person that had gone to prepare the way for Jesus. He'd been executed by Herod. Some people think he's John the Baptist come back to life. Others think he's a great prophet or a teacher. You know, they get all these different answers. And then it kind of centers in on, well, who do you think I am? And often on these occasions, everyone sits there and kind of suddenly discovers they really ought to retie their shoelaces, or kind of at least inspect their watch, or probably if they had a phone, it would have been a good moment to have checked their emails. But as usual, it's Peter that opens his mouth and says, you're the Christ, the Son of the living God. And this is an incredible declaration about Jesus' divinity and humanity kind of combined in the person that's before them. It's a seismic moment, really, in his ministry. And kind of, it's almost like they've got the groundwork. There's still this sense of ambiguity about what other people think about him. But now it's time to make the way to Jerusalem and to his cross and to the cross and to everything that's going to follow. And I would say, essentially, this research that EA and the Church of England have been doing is a bit like Jesus asking that question. Only it's asked of people today. Who do people say I am? And it's interesting. I'm not a polist. I mean, we've got someone who works in media here, Libby, and she could probably help us on that one. I gather there is a certain size of poll that people are confident if they kind of take that sort of sample, it gives you a realistic understanding of kind of what people genuinely think. I know that in the last elections, that didn't quite work out as everyone expected. But kind of on the whole, there is a science to polls. And they applied that science to this survey. And they did it. And they got the results. And the people that did the poll took the results to the people that commissioned it, the church leaders. And the church leaders looked at it and said, that's wrong. Can't be right. It's not clearly not what people think. Go and do it again. So actually, in the end, they did this poll off of twice the normal size poll that anyone would normally expect to get a reasonable answer from. So it was a large sample, and it came back with the same results first time round. So the first question was, it was about the people that were surveyed and kind of how they identified themselves. And if I could have the next slide, nearly 60% of the people that were surveyed would identify themselves as being Christian. Does that surprise you? There's some shaking hands and there's some nodding. It's obviously divisive. It surprised me. I wouldn't have thought that number of people would identify themselves in that sort of way. 40% clearly identify themselves as either of being no faith or of some other faith. And if you're like me, I kind of like to know, well, what does that actually mean? So kind of 58% Christian, 12% atheist, 9% agnostic. Now on their 3, it says Muslim, and that's interesting because I think the census says 5%. So kind of there's a slight kind of twist on that. Actually quite low. Hindu 2, Jewish 1, Buddhist 1, Sikh other, 3 other, none of the above. I guess that's the people that write Jedi on their census forms. I don't quite get that one, but people do apparently. There are Jedis out there. Have they got lightsabers and can they do stuff with the Force? I don't quite know. Fascinating, isn't it, that actually, kind of in the age in which we live, only 20% of people would kind of say they don't believe in God at all. That's actually, for me, that is quite striking. You know, we live in a surprisingly, you know, a world that is open to God, and perhaps more than perhaps we might expect. I think. I don't know. So, Now, there's an interesting twist there. If we go back to that whole thing about 58% saying that they would identify themselves as Christian, then the survey tried to make a distinction between those that would identify themselves as Christian and those that would be kind of in some way living it out in a distinctive way. And so they made a distinction between those that identify themselves as Christian, 58%, and those that would be kind of considered as practicing Christians. Any idea? Anyone want to throw out a percentage that might be out of that, that would identify themselves as practicing Christians? Practicing Christians are people that that prayed regularly, that read their Bible, and that have been to church in the month prior to the survey, kind of have been to church kind of on a monthly basis. Kind of what sort of percentage that might come out at? Any suggestions? 20. No, not as high as that, actually. 9% came out of that. That kind of people that would actively be doing what we're doing today, I guess. Which is interesting, isn't it? Very different to that kind of but what it says is, you know, there might be 9% that kind of are doing what we're doing today. But there are a lot of people out there that are actually saying, actually, I associate myself with Christianity. And that's a really positive thing, isn't it? I think it is. What about Jesus? What about this question, where Jesus asks, who do they say I am? What their answers would be? Well, the Bible is our major source for what we know about Jesus. So what do people kind of think about the Bible? Kind of fascinating, if I could have the next slide up, 39% believe that the Bible is God's word. In fact, the actual phraseology is the actual inspired word of God. I mean, that's quite incredible, isn't it? That actually people would have that belief. 15% of the Bible is not inspired by God, but tells how people of kind of biblical times, kind of what they believed about God, and principles about how to live. 28% believe the Bible is not inspired by God and is simply another book of teachings that contains stories and advice. 8% don't know. But again, incredible level of confidence or belief in the scriptures. Bill. And don't ask me a deep question. No, go on.
Is this that you're doing now, the survey of the 58%?
No, if you look at that, that's on the whole of people nationally. It's a good question, because some of the stats, in a moment we're going to look at the resurrection. And to believe in the resurrection, it actually precludes believing that Jesus existed. So actually, the percentages for the resurrection are out of the percentage that actually believe Jesus existed. If that makes sense. But this is the national survey of what people believe in this country about the scriptures. So kind of when you think about talking about your faith, you can often think, well, the Bible, would I talk to people about the Bible or not? And actually, people are really open to the fact that actually the Bible would speak to us. It's fascinating. This week, I just really want to talk particularly about kind of what people believe about Jesus. That's just really what my heart is this week. Next week, I want to talk much more about, it identifies that 9% of people that describe themselves as practicing Christians, and it digs a bit deeper into them, because it asks them kind of some of their faith stories. Yeah, well, how did you come to be that? How did you come to believe? Kind of what were the factors in it? And there's some interesting messages in that. One of the interesting messages is just how big a part just reading the Bible played in people coming to faith. The number that would talk about a key part of them coming to a personal faith for themselves was just opening the Bible and reading it. And actually, if you look at those stats, you can think, well, actually, yeah. Because if that number of people believe, there are clearly more people that are practicing Christians that believe the Bible's God's word. Even if they don't believe it is, that 15%, they believe it tells us a lot about Jesus. And therefore, actually reading that can be life-changing for people. So just putting the scriptures in someone's hand can make a massive difference. But that's a bit of next week, really. Okay. That's about how people come to faith. Look at the next slide. Before we kind of jump into the detail of this, what about Jesus? Did Jesus actually exist? Don't jump slides yet, please. Otherwise, he gives out the answer. How many people believe, do you think, that Jesus actually was a real person who actually lived? Going to give me a guess on that one? Just shout. I can't quite hear. 70, 80. You're quite confident. I'm clearly a more cynical person than you guys are, I would say. Because I was staggered when this came out. It came out that 60% believe that Jesus was actually a historical person who lived. Interesting, that's more people than actually would describe themselves as Christians, which actually is interesting. But actually, it's not as high as you said. 22%, a mythical figure. There's an 18%, I don't know. And I kind of find that quite fascinating. Do you remember when we did the talk on the Jesus paradox last term? I'm just going to bring up a couple of things back from that, if we could have the next slide. You remember that quote from Bertrand Russell? Historically, it is quite doubtful whether Christ ever existed at all, or if he did, whether we know anything about him, which is just kind of mind-boggling that that wasn't written that long ago. But there is just so much evidence that points to the existence of Jesus. And a lot of people say more evidence than Julius Caesar. And that evidence doesn't just come from the Bible. It comes from Josephus, Tacitus, Sustenius, a whole load of other writers of Jesus' time. And just kind of a reminder of that with the next slide. Oh, flip. I've got to read. I didn't put it in my notes. I thought I'd read it off the slide. Has anyone got any binoculars? I might have to step down for the large print version. This is all the stuff that is arrived at completely ignoring the Bible. If you just kind of go to people that wrote about stuff at the time of Jesus outside of the Bible, kind of Greek, Roman kind of writers, philosophers, historians, this is kind of what you can summarize about Jesus from them. Jesus lived during the time of Tiberius Caesar. He lived a virtuous life. He was a wonder worker. He had a brother named James. He claimed to be the Messiah. He was crucified under Pontius Pilate. An eclipse and an earthquake occurred when he died. He was crucified on the eve of the Jewish Passover. His disciples believed that he rose from the dead. His disciples were willing to die for their belief. Christianity spread rapidly as far as Rome. His disciples denied the Roman gods and worshipped Jesus as God. And if I was to say to you, write me a potted history of what you know from the Bible about Jesus, probably you would write what actually we know without needing the Bible to tell us. Quite amazing amount of factual stuff that points to the existence of Jesus that's out there. And so actually I find that quite fascinating that we... For me, it's quite positive that actually there's 60% that believe he existed, because actually the 20% that or 40% that don't, actually there's just so much evidence. It's almost like, well, actually just show them the evidence, you know? It's not rocket science. You know, we wouldn't kind of think, oh, we don't teach someone because they don't believe in the atom about the atom. It's there, you know? There's nothing to be kind of threatened by in any of that. Okay, so a lot of people believe that Jesus existed. You get this kind of question that Jesus asked his disciples. You know, well, what do people believe about that? You know, who do the people of my day say I am? Who do you say I am? And this is where we're looking at that 60% who believe, not the whole percentage. Who do people, What do people Jesus think Jesus was? So 17%, just a human being like us. God in human form, 21%. A prophet or a spiritual leader, but not God, 30%. That's quite frightening in a way, isn't it? Because there's 52% of people that would describe themselves as Christian. But of those that believe that Jesus existed, which is a similar sort of percentage, only... 20-odd percent of them would actually believe that Jesus was God in human form. So it kind of shows that a bit like the response that Jesus gets when he says to his disciples, you know, who do the people say I am? And all these different things come kind of flowing back. It still feels like people are really quite muddled about who Jesus is. Now, most believe that Jesus was a prophet or a spiritual leader, but not actually God. Few would echo Peter's words. You are the Christ, the Son of the living God. But probably actually not that dissimilar to Jesus' day. Okay, what about the resurrection? Just leave that one up for a moment. For those that believe that Jesus is the Son of God and the God-man, kind of, this is the foundation for why we believe that, isn't it? It's the resurrection that kind of gives the evidence for who he really is. So kind of for the final section today, I just really want to look at kind of people's beliefs about the resurrection. So just take a moment just to discuss that with the person next to you, kind of with your neighbour. What would people believe about the resurrection today? Did it happen? Is it believable? Kind of if 58% of people believe, 60% of people believe Jesus lived, 20% of people believe that he was kind of God in human form, how many people would actually believe that the resurrection really took place? The people that believe in the resurrection, the people that believe he existed. So it's out of the people that believed he existed. Sorry. The first set of figures are about just the population nationally, and then the second lot will be about those that believe he existed. Yeah, so yeah, it's both. Okay, any offers? How many people think Jesus really rose from the dead? We've got a 10% from Hannah. Okay, any advance on 10? Kind of 20? Yeah. Okay. It's really fascinating, isn't it? Because you kind of guys went the other way with me, thought more people would definitely believe Jesus was a real person. Actually, it kind of, if you look at it, it goes kind of almost the other way with this one. 17% believe the resurrection from the dead happened word for word as described in the Bible. And that kind of might seem low. 26% believe in the resurrection, but kind of think some of the content should not be taken literally. If you took that's something like 40% of people believe that kind of the resurrection happened in some way or form or the other. 13% don't believe in it at all. 4% don't believe. 22% believe Jesus is fictional. 18% don't believe it. I don't know whether he's real or fictional. So that's that kind of 40% that drop out of it because they didn't believe in Jesus in the first place. So if you do apply it to those who believe that Jesus existed, that he was a real person, kind of the results are quite staggering. 28% of those believe that word for word that he rose from the dead. 43% believe in the resurrection in general. Only 22% don't, which is, I just find, quite staggering. I also find it quite challenging. Because kind of there's some strange things going on there, aren't there? There are more people that believe that Jesus rose from the dead than actually believe that he's God. So there's kind of a strange anomaly there, or it seems like a strange anomaly to me, particularly for someone who kind of sees themselves as a bit of an apologist. Kind of you're looking for kind of presenting reasonable arguments for why people should believe in Jesus. And kind of my source of reasonable arguments about why people should believe in Jesus is almost immediately to go to the resurrection, because you kind of think, well, you can claim what you like. You can say, I am, before I am before, brain has gone dead. I'm doing a carol. You can. That was probably. That may not have been a good comment. No Sunday lunch for the vicar. She's thought of her word. That's great. I'm glad you've thought of your word. I've completely forgotten mine. Can you look at the claims that Jesus made? I am the resurrection and the life. Before Abraham, I am. That kind of taking the name of God. I am the light of the world. I am the bread of life. Kind of all these kind of huge claims about him that we would kind of associate with his divinity. The way Thomas kneels before him and says, you're my Lord and my God. And Jesus doesn't in any way kind of deny that. Kind of, you can make those claims. That's one thing. But actually to rise from the dead is another. And it's the thing that for me as an apologist seems to always authenticate. But it's interesting, isn't it? Because actually, clearly, in popular thought, that isn't necessarily the case. You know, that actually, our ideas that kind of reason, an argument, kind of will mean that people, they believe this thing, will believe another, doesn't necessarily kind of work. People don't always join up the dots. Has implication for people that are preachers. There's a whole load of clergy sitting listening to that. We went, oh. Because kind of, what do you do on Easter Day? You know, it's Easter, you're celebrating the resurrection. Bill, what have you spoke about more on Easter Day than anything else? And it may be that you're much more enlightened than I am. Well, you're better. Yeah, but how would you teach about the resurrection? It's all right, he's retired. Don't worry. For me, when I think about my preaching on Easter Day, and you can check me out over the last 20-odd years... I would say I've probably given more time to presenting arguments that it actually happened than doing anything else. Would that be a fair point? Because what you think you need to do is to convince people that it's happened. Yeah? But actually, what we're doing is convincing people that believe it's happened all over again. Does that make sense? It's almost like there's a greater need not to prove it, because actually an awful lot of people believe it, but to get people to see the significance of what they already believe, what it actually means that he rose from the dead. So actually it kind of changes how we talk about it, in quite a significant way. And for an awful lot of clergy sitting there listening to this, there was this kind of, oh, I've been doing it wrong for the last 20 years kind of moment. Not that we have, of course, but it kind of feels a little bit like that. Next week, I just really want to pick up on, what do people think about Christians? You might not want to come along. No. It's actually, no, do come. Because actually, when you listen to the media, no offense, Libby, often the message is kind of on the negative side. But actually, actually people's perceptions are actually much more positive. I want to look a bit about how do people come to faith. What are the implications in that for our evangelism? If you remember at the annual church meeting, someone said, do you want to ask the question, should we be having more meetings which we invite people to specifically come and hear? Well, actually, some of the messages about how people come to faith have implications about models for evangelism, how we share our faith with others. What I want to close with today is, what are the words that people use when they are asked what comes to mind when they think about Jesus? And I just think that's just quite fascinating, because I suspect they're the sorts of words that we would associate with, and I suspect many of them are the sorts of words that kind of unlock a little bit of the key to why we're Christians, actually. The final slide, I think, if that's okay, thanks. What do people think of Jesus? Kind of these are the phrases that come to mind when the population are asked, what do they think of Jesus? Spiritual, loving, peaceful, a leader, wise, inspirational. Kind of that's what most of the population of this country think about Jesus. And doesn't that take us back to the gospel reading? I think it does. You know, here is Jesus, this man that has attracted crowds with a bunch of people, a small percentage maybe, who have chosen to lay down their lives and everything they've been doing and follow him. And they're doing it because they've been completely captivated by him. And kind of, why are we here today? Well, I suspect we're here today. Why would we kind of probably tick that box if we were asked, are you a practicing Christian? You know, why would we do that? Actually, it's because we're captivated by Jesus. Because there's something about Jesus that draws us to him that is totally different. And the wonderful thing is that actually, when most of the population are asked about what they think of when they think of Jesus, kind of it's in those terms. That same attraction, that same, you know, there's something about this man, I don't know quite what it is, that draws me, is there, kind of in their lives, in what makes them tick. I think that's the most incredibly encouraging thing. Well, I don't know, perhaps I'm alone, I don't know, I hope there's some nodding going on. And because I think sometimes we kind of feel like, oh, I don't know if I should own up that I'm a Christian, or perhaps I shouldn't talk about it, or stuff like that. And actually, I think as we see next week, actually people are far more open to us talking about it than we think that they would be, you know? Let's pray.